pausing when he looks in my direction. Crap, what now? Stella, what are you doing in this class? You passed all 3 years of pain already, he says. His voice is low and unpleasant. I turn to Stella, relieved it wasn't actually me he was looking at. I know, it's ridiculous, Uncle, she responds, rolling her eyes. She jabs a finger to point at me. I'm here to babysit this one. Someone thinks she might have a little too much juice to play nicely with the other first years, but I've seen no evidence of that. She huffs and leans back in her chair, a look of annoyance that mirrors the teacher's painted across her face, but her eyes hold a scheming edge. I flush, feeling every student in the room's eyes on me. You are? He asks me. Mackenzie Crowe, I tell him, and he narrows his eyes at me and walks to the front of the class. I'm Mr. Tower, and welcome to pain class, he says in a bored tone as he leans against his desk. Pain is one of our strongest marks, and one many people overlook because you cannot see it. The pain mark is very difficult to block, and difficult to have any control over. I'm here to teach you control and how to use pain, without accidentally killing someone. He explains, his tone sounding like he has repeated the same sentence a million times. Did you like the pain mark, Mackenzie? Stella asks with a chuckle, and I glare at her. Fuck off, I reply, and turn back to look at Mr. Tower as he looks around the class. To use your pain mark is simple. You just imagine the mark and then the amount of pain you wish to cause that person. If you wish to kill them, you can. If you wish to paralyze them, you can, he says and carries on listing as Stella whispers.
I could have killed you. You know that, right?
I don't reply or even bother looking at her as she speaks.
Stay the fuck away from Enzo and East, or I will kill you, little Mackenzie. The 12th mark will be useless to protect you,
she says in a sweet tone. The tone is creepy as hell, considering it's laced with threat at the same time. I go to reply, then I hear Mr. Tower speak louder.
What's your name?
He asks a blonde guy in the front row. Sam Pagan, the guy replies. Mr. Tower waves him over and straightens up off the desk. Sam stops in front of him, and Mr. Tower holds an arm out.
Place your hand on mine and use your pain mark, Mr. Tower says, and I lean forward on my desk to watch.
Sam nods and does it. I wait for any reaction from Mr. Tower, but there isn't any. Suddenly, Sam screams out, dropping to the floor. Mr. Tower grins sardonically, looking pleased with himself and making no move to help Sam up. What the hell was that?
Pain is easy to stop and send back, as Mr. Pagan has just learned. Another volunteer? He asks, and there's silence around the room.
Who would be crazy enough to go up there?
Uncle, Mackenzie just said she wants to volunteer, Stella shouts out, and I narrow my eyes at her.
Just friggin' great.
Both of you come up here, Mr. Tower says, and Stella's smirk only grows.
She planned this. I slide out of my seat and walk to the front of the class, watching as Sam walks slowly back to his seat and gives me a worried look. I pull my eyes away from him and force myself to remember the protection mark Mr. Daniels taught me as I stand next to Stella.
Now, I don't expect you to use your full power, Stella, he says, and Stella chuckles,
mumbling something I can't hear, and likely don't want to.
But I expect you to show Kenzie how strong pain can be. Kenzie, I want you to try and use your pain mark against Stella, he directs us,
clearly thinking I don't have a chance as he nods at me.
Stella holds a hand out, and I call my protection mark, imagining it covering me, and then picture my pain mark. The two seem to work well together in my mind, but I have no idea if this will work until I take her hand. I force myself to forget the pain she made me feel at the party and place my hand in hers. There's a slight wave of pain that shoots up my arm, but I concentrate, pushing the pain mark into my mind and imagining it hurting her. I glance up to see her eyes widen, seconds before she starts screaming and trying to pull her hand away, but I don't want to let go. All I can remember is her threatening to kill me, to hurt me like she did before.
"Kenzie, stop this now!"
Mr. Tower shouts, but I don't see anything other than Stella screaming and the pain mark in my mind. I briefly imagine the 12th mark, the arrow and the broken sphere, and I start feeling the mark burning on the back of my neck, just before everything goes black. "Kenzie," East's voice says gently as I blink my eyes open. East is holding me on his lap, my head on his shoulder, and his hand wrapped around my hip.
"What happened?"
I ask, looking around the room and seeing that we are in my bedroom, sitting on my bed. The curtains are open and the room is tidy. Thank gods I cleaned up my underwear from the floor this morning. "Mr. Tower had to knock you out when you used too much pain on Stella. You nearly killed her, Kenz," he says gently, and I remember it. I couldn't stop myself, and it felt like the mark was taking me over. "Don't worry. Some powers are harder to control, and pain is addictive. I have that mark," he tells me, and I rest my head back on his shoulder. I feel safe around East, and I'm thankful it was him that found me. I glance down at his soft blue shirt and his tight jeans. He is looking as sexy as ever.
"I couldn't stop, and then I pictured the 12th mark,"
I say, and stop talking. The mark just popped into my mind, pushing out the pain mark, but she was still screaming, so I must have still been hurting her. Everything is blurry, but I couldn't have been holding her for more than a couple of minutes, or Mr. Tower would have stopped me sooner. "The room shook just before he knocked you out. I was walking past and ran in," he says gently, moving to stroke my forehead. I stay still as I feel his hand get warm. He's healing me. "The room shook," I ask when he pulls his hand away. I move a little and become very aware that I'm on his lap, all alone in my room. I try not to blush as he speaks. His voice is so seductive and he doesn't know it. "Yes, like an earthquake, but it was no earth power," he replies. I nod, still a little speechless, and now I can't think about the pain class at all. Sexy East is in my bed, holding me. Kelly is never going to believe this.
"Why are we in my room, and why am I in your lap?"
I ask, and he chuckles. "Don't you like being on my lap?" he asks me, his tone dropping and his voice becoming even more seductive. I move my head up in confusion, wondering why he would flirt with me. A stray lock of his blonde-tipped hair falls into his eyes, and as I reach up to push it out of the way, East meets my eyes. His gaze is full of desire, something I never thought I'd see directed at me. East has never looked at me like this before.
"East,"
I start to say, and he kisses me. I freeze for a second, in shock, and then I respond by gently kissing him back. East's hand slides into my hair as he deepens the kiss. The kiss is so powerful that I can't think straight until he pulls away. Sexy East kissed me.
"Shit, I shouldn't have done that," he says in a gruff tone, moving me off his lap and standing up off the bed.
"Why? You wanted it as much as I did,"
I say, ignoring the trickle of doubt that comes into my mind. Did he not like the kiss?
Ryan will go crazy. You're his little sister and... He starts and I cut him off, not willing to listen to excuses. Just leave, I say, gesturing at the door. He stares down at me, not moving. Kenz, he starts again, and I stand up, crossing the room and holding the door open for him. I've always liked you, East, but if you're not prepared to be with me because of your friendship with my brother, then I'm not chasing you like all the girls I knew growing up did. I'm not one of those girls, no matter how much I liked that kiss, I say, and he chuckles. Then it stops, and his eyes widen. Shit, you always liked me, he asks, walking over and using that seductive voice again. I don't breathe as he stops in front of me, so close that all I can do is look up at him. I know he can see how upset I am, and I hate that. I don't want him to know he affects me. Always, I answer, and he leans forward, kissing me gently, and then stepping back.
I've got to call your brother, he says with a little cheeky grin, but I know he is worried.
East, are you sure? I ask, and he nods.
I want to date you, and I can't do that if I'm lying to him. So, I'm going to tell him, and then I'm taking you out on a real date,
he says, making me blush. And how do you know I'm going to say yes to that date? I ask, and he chuckles slowly as his eyes rake all over my body before finally landing on my eyes.
Kenz, I know you'll say yes,
he replies confidently before walking out of my room. I want to say no, but as I glance at his jean-covered ass as he walks away, I know I'll say yes too.
Chapter 17. Logan. Yes, I kissed her, East says as I walk into our room. I pull my coat off and leave my phone on the side. I give him a questioning look as he listens to someone else on the phone. I can hear them shouting from here, and East is slightly holding the phone away from his ear. No, look, calm down and call me back when you're being more reasonable, East says, and stops the call. I know that voice. It's Ryan. Kenzie, I ask, holding in the jealousy I feel when he nods. I saw the way she looked at him, and the way she looks at me, sometimes. Females are rarer than males in our kind, and it can be difficult for a female marked to have children, so more than one husband is recommended. My mum has three husbands. They all brought me up, and I call them all Dad. It may not be a lifestyle for humans, but it works for us. I could share Kenzie with East, if she likes me, that is. How was it? I ask, and he smirks at me. Why don't you find out for yourself? I know that look, dickhead, he says, and I laugh and jump on my bed, quickly stretching out. What happened in pain? I ask him, having heard about what happened in the halls just then, and hearing that East stormed off carrying Kenzie, telling the teacher to go fuck himself and speak to Mr. Daniels if he had a problem. I bet that shut him up quick. She lost it and nearly killed Stella. I didn't want to freak her out, so I didn't tell her everything that happened when I got there. What happened? I heard rumors about some kind of black glow, I ask. It sounded like bullshit to me. Kenz was glowing with like a black haze around her, and there was a force pushing everyone away from her. Mr. Tower used air to throw her across the room, and I just about managed to catch her. He says, fucking hell. When Mr. Daniels asked us to watch her, he warned that it might be dangerous as we have no clue what her 12th mark is. I've never heard of anyone glowing black before or being able to create a force that pushes people away other than just using air. But this wasn't anything like an air mark. There was no gust of wind, just an intense pressure that forced people back. I wonder what the hell that last power is. I know it's something powerful because I asked one of my dads, who works at the Marked History Museum. Apparently, there is a book about the 12th mark, and all the book talks about is destroying those that have the mark. I don't see how Kenzie could be a threat, and that's only one crazy dead person's opinion, but this won't help her case. Did she pass out? I ask. Yeah, she did, he replies, picking his phone up as it starts ringing. "Calm down yet, dickhead," East mutters as he answers the phone. His eyes widen. "Shit, sorry, Mum. Thought it was someone else calling." He shoots me a grin and rolls his eyes. I can hear his mum's scolding down the phone from the other side of the room. My own phone starts to buzz and I look down. "Fuck. Hey, Ryan," I answer loudly so that East can hear. He shoots me a worried look. He's clearly much more concerned by whatever Ryan has to say than his mother's yelling. "Put East on the phone," Ryan grunts. "Can't. He's on the phone to his mum," I reply. "Fuck his mum," Ryan shouts. "Calm down, Rye. He can't go fucking his mum just because he's screwing your sister," I joke. "I'm not screwing anyone," East yells across the room, clearly hoping Ryan will hear him. "Sorry, Mum, again," he says down the phone, a pained expression crossing his face. "You know what I meant. Tell East he's not dating my fucking sister, okay?" he snaps. "Yeah, sure, I'll pass on the message, but what about me?" I slip in. "You have got to be kidding me," he mutters. "No, I'm not kidding, Rye," I reply. "She's my little sister," he growls. "She's really not that little anymore. It's not really your decision either way. East, asking you was a courtesy, but I know that I'm still going to pursue her either way, and so will he," I say calmly. "I'm not happy about this," he mutters. "Kenny needs to be concentrating right now." "Who are you now? Her dad?" I jibe. "Depends which one," he answers with a harsh laugh. "She's got 12 powers. She needs to concentrate. I don't want her being one of those people who lose control," he says softly. "We won't distract her. We're helping her in her classes anyway, dude. We care about Kenzie. We won't do anything that puts her in danger." "I guess. Better the devil you know, right?" he comments, sighing in defeat. "Look, I'm not happy, but I guess I can't stop you. Just know I won't hesitate to kill any of you if you hurt her," he mutters. "Hey, we got it, dude," I reply. I shoot a thumbs up to East, who grins back at me like a maniac. "Tell East I still want to talk to him. There's things I want to make clear to him, especially considering his track record," Ryan mutters. "Sure, I'll tell him." "Thanks, mate. I've got to go," he says. "Okay, bye then." "Bye," he says, and then the call disconnects. "So," East says, dragging out the word. "I thought you were on the phone to your mum," I ask, narrowing my eyes on him. "The call disconnected about a minute ago." "Bad reception where she is, I guess," he says, shrugging. "You were still talking," I accuse him. He smiles slyly. "Yeah, I really didn't fancy talking to Ryan. Thanks for sorting that out for me," he replies. "Ryan still wants to talk to you about it," I say, watching the smile fade from his face. "Damn," he says softly. "Not off the hook that easy," I reply with a chuckle. "I have a feeling nothing about Kenzie is going to be easy," he replies, a smile taking over his face in contradiction to his words. "But when was easy ever fun?" he adds, standing up. "Where are you going?" I ask, watching him saunter off to the door. "Where do you think?" he replies as he exits the room, slamming the door behind him.
Chapter 18. Kenzie. I sink deeper into the tub, feeling the hot water work out all the knots in my body as I relax, breathing in the aroma from the bath bombs I'd thrown in. I'm sure Kelly won't mind the fact I nicked a few. The purple, bubble-covered hot water is heavenly, and I'm making no attempt to move anytime soon. I shut my eyes and just relax, listening to the soft music I'd left playing in my room carry through the door into the bathroom. Peace. I'm jarred awake by the sound of the bathroom door crashing open. I sit up, crossing a hand over my chest as I face the person who'd let themselves in. "Shit, Kenz," East exclaims, staring right at me, where I'm sitting, naked, in the bathtub. "What the hell are you doing in here?" I all but screech, feeling mortified. Sexy East kisses me, and then walks in on me naked in the bathtub all in one day. Kelly was never going to believe this. He didn't answer when I called. I thought maybe something had happened, okay?
he says quickly, stepping back. I am so thankful for all the bubbles right now. At least they are affording me some coverage. I fell asleep. I didn't hear you, I explain, shrinking back down lower into the tub, hoping to hide more of myself.
Why is your door open? Kenz, are you okay?
Locke's voice comes from the bedroom, just seconds before he walks into the bathroom, and his eyes widen. He looks between me and East, then smirks.
Move out of the way. Why are you just standing there?
Logan's voice comes from behind Locke, and I meet his eyes over his twin shoulder. He looks just as shocked.
Out! All of you!
I say, and Locke laughs slightly, his eyes running over my body in the water. I don't think he can see me, but his grin suggests otherwise. I sink myself as low as possible in the water, praying the purple bubbles hide me. I mean, three extremely hot men are in my bathroom, while I'm naked. I didn't know if this was a gift or punishment from the gods. But you let East in here, Locke whines playfully, and East grabs his arm, dragging him from the room. Logan grabs the door, giving me a small smile as he follows after them. I wait until the door is shut before getting out of the bath. There goes my plan to relax in the bath for an hour. I dry myself off and mentally curse when I realize I've not brought any clothes in here with me. I tighten my towel around myself before opening the door a little and leaning out. Logan, I ask.
Yes,
he answers, getting off the chair he was sitting in and walking over. East and Locke watch as they both sit on my bed.
Could you get me some clothes?
I ask him.
I can get your underwear,
Locke says with a big grin, and I glare at him.
No, Logan can,
I reply, and Logan chuckles, but starts moving around my room getting things. He comes back and passes me a bundle of clothes through the door, keeping his eyes on mine, and I kind of like that he does that. I laugh a little when I see he has chosen my lacy red bra and matching red knickers. Maybe Logan likes me in red. I'm glad I chose Logan when I see my tight skinny jeans and grey jumper in the pile. I pull them all on and plait my towel-dried hair, just before the academy shakes and I fall to the ground, my back slamming into the bathtub as I slide across the floor.
Get Kenz!
I hear East shout as the shaking stops, and I stand up as Locke opens the door.
You okay?
He asks me as he rushes in, and I nod. He takes my hand, leading me back into the bedroom where East and Logan were waiting. The room is a mess. The wardrobe is on the floor, and my stuff is all over the place. I step over my upside-down basket and pick up my iPad. The screen is cracked, and it's far worse than my phone. Great. Just friggin' great.
What was that?
I ask, but no one answers as a message fills the room. It takes me a minute to realize that there must be hidden speakers.
The Academy is under attack. Please stay in your rooms. If anyone is hurt, report to the gym once lockdown is over.
The message cuts out, and the room is silent for a second.
Attacked by the rogues?
I ask as Logan slams the bedroom door shut.
They have been attacking places recently. They must want something from here,
East says and looks at me strangely. My phone starts ringing and I look around, finding it on the floor by the bed. I just about manage to unlock the phone with the cracked screen.
Kenz, I'm in the library and we are trapped. They are breaking all the boxes in here and I'm hiding. Are you safe?
Kelly says, and I go to reply when my phone beeps before turning off.
Kelly? Kelly! No!
I say, trying to turn the phone back on.
Stupid phone.
I don't think as I walk towards the door and pull it open, ignoring the guys shouting for me as I run down the corridor and towards the library.
Kenz, don't!
East shouts as I run down the stairs. I rush out into the courtyard and across into the main building, hearing the guys chase after me. Other than me and the guys, there is no one around. And there's a loud noise coming from the direction of the library when I get to it.
Where are the teachers?
I run around the corridor, seeing the doors to the library, and there is a girl standing outside. The girl has on a leather jacket, leather trousers, and has long brown hair up in a ponytail. She smiles widely when she sees me, and she looks familiar as her green eyes look over at me. A scream comes from the library, and I step forward, stopping when I see the student at her feet. He looks familiar and must be from one of my classes. He is withering in pain as she places her hand on his forehead. She's using pain on him, and a lot of it.
"Little girl, you might want to turn around," she says, moving her hand, and the guy passes out.
"No," I say coldly, hearing East, Locke, and Logan as they come to my side. I look at them briefly, and Locke glares at me, but doesn't say anything. All of them seem to be at the same conclusion as me. I'm not leaving without Kelly. She doesn't have defensive powers.
"This should be fun." The girl laughs as she raises her hands, and a gust of air slams into us.
I hold my hands up, calling my own air power, but all I do is manage to stop myself from flying. It doesn't matter as Locke wraps his arms around my waist and lifts his hand, making a white ward appear. It's shaped like a shield, and it stops the wind from getting to us. I turn and watch as East flies up into the air, lifting his hands, and Logan uses a stream of water which he pushes against the wind, mixing with it. He shoots the jet of water straight at the girl. He does it so fast that she can't move in time, and the water makes her slam into the corridor wall. The girl stands up with a little smirk and shifts. I've never seen a shift before. None of my parents have that mark. It's like her body glimmers a little and goes blurry as her shape changes. I step back when I see the giant snake she has turned into. The snake is green and massive, bigger than a car.
"Gods,"
I say, my voice trailing off as I watch. Locke lowers his hand, the shield disappearing. He pulls me closer to his side as Logan steps in front of us, and East literally flies and lands next to him.
"We have to go,"
a man says, running out of the library and stopping in front of the snake girl. The man is older, with black hair and wearing a black cloak with the hood down. He is holding a blue box, which looks old and covered in marks. He seems to realize we are all looking at him as he turns and lifts his hands. A white ward spreads from his hands until there's a wall between us and them.
"Stop playing with the kids. I got it,"
the man says, holding up the box, and the snake turns, slithering down the corridor. The man looks back at me once as I push between Logan and East. He doesn't say anything, but he gives me a strange look, like he knows me, before pulling his hood up. I watch as he turns and runs off after the snake.
"Can we break the ward?"
I ask after they both disappear. "I need to get to Kelly."
"Yes, we can do it together. I'm the only one out of us guys with the ward power, but between us two, we can overload it,"
Locke tells me. He takes my hand and walks us up to the ward.
"Imagine the ward cracking, breaking into tiny parts, and call your protection mark into your mind, Kenz,"
he tells me, and I nod, doing as he asks as he places our joined hands on the ward. I close my eyes as I feel the power from it spread down my arm. It's slightly painful. I imagine it breaking and falling into little white bits. When I open my eyes, Locke is smiling down at me, and all around us are little bits of the ward. It's like snow falling, and we lower our hands.
"Kenzie!"
Kelly shouts, and I turn to see her running out of the library. She throws herself into my arms, and I wrap my arms around her and hug her tightly. Thank gods she is okay.
"What happened?"
I ask, but she doesn't get a chance to reply as I hear Mr. Daniels shout behind us.
"What are you doing out of your rooms?"
I turn to see him storming down the corridor, and aiming straight for me as Kelly steps away. He looks angry, and it's a bit scary. It's also a good look on him. It's hot.
Kelly called, and
I get out before he interrupts.
No, I don't care. Do you not realize what they wanted, Miss Crow? How much danger you were in?
He snaps. I take a step back, surprised he would speak to me like that. I'm not stupid, and I know how dangerous it was running here, but I would never forgive myself if Kelly died while I sat in my room hiding. That's not me.
Don't speak to her like that,
East says protectively, and it seems to make Mr. Daniels even madder. East comes to my side and links his fingers with mine.
You all have detention, and get to your goddamn rooms now,
he shouts, his voice echoing down the corridor. The guys all glare at him, but start to walk away with Kelly following. East tugs on my hand, and we start to follow Kelly.
Not you, Miss Crow. The head teachers want to see you. Now,
Mr. Daniels says. Fine, I say, stopping.
Good luck,
East whispers to me, and squeezes my hand before walking off with Kelly. Locke and Logan shoot me worried glances as they go up the stairs. Let's go then, I say, walking away from him and towards the stairs.
Fuck, wait,
Mr. Daniels says, catching up to me and grabbing my arm to stop me. Why, do you want to shout at me more for trying to save my friend? I'm not saying sorry for it, I tell him. He looks down at me, and then to his hand on my arm. He doesn't move his hand like I expect him to.
I'm sorry. I was scared you were hurt. I went to your room looking for you and panicked when you weren't there.
He tells me softly. I move my hand, placing it on his chest before I say anything. I'm surprised he doesn't stop me, and I can feel his heart beating fast under my palm. I'm okay, I tell him gently, watching as his eyes search my own.
Mackenzie.
He says my name slowly as he moves closer, and his hand slides up my arm.
Mr. Daniels!
A voice shouts down the corridor, and he jumps away from me. What the hell just happened between us? I turn to see Miss Tinder walking towards us from the stairs. She doesn't look impressed and flashes me a disgusted look. I try not to chuckle when I see her red hair is now short, cut into a bob, and I know it's because of our lesson. Serves her right.
Mr. Daniels, the head teachers are waiting for Miss Crow, and you are needed in the gym. We have caught some of the rogues, and we need you to make them shift back, she says.
I didn't know he could do that. I know that it's a sign that his transmutation mark is extremely strong and makes him an alpha over most animals. I wonder what he shifts into.
No problem, he says and walks away.
I watch as he looks back at me once, a confused look in his eyes, and I know it's not just me that felt something then. These kinds of feelings could get him fired and me kicked out of the academy. As much as I like him, I don't want that for him or me.
Come now, Miss Crow,
Miss Tinder says, and I follow her down the stairs, feeling sad that I didn't meet Mr. Daniels somewhere else. Chapter 19. Kenzie. I've been at the Marked Academy less than a week, and somehow this is my second visit inside the headmaster's office. Just my luck. I tap my fingers against my knees and glance over my shoulder every so often, waiting for someone to join me in the room. However, they appear to be letting me stew. I don't see why I should be in trouble. I was just trying to help my friend. Surely they should understand that. And it's not like I was the only one out of their room. They just don't like me. That's got to be it. The sound of the door opening behind me cuts off my inner rambling. I turn around and watch as all three headmasters of the school enter the office, followed by Mr. Daniels. I swear that man is everywhere. One of the headmasters takes a seat behind the desk I'm facing toward.
The other two push their chairs over as well, either side of him, so they are all facing across from me. One united front against Kenzie, because that's not intimidating at all. A chair scrapes against the floor next to me. I turn my head and notice Mr. Daniels sitting beside me. A warm feeling runs through me as he shoots me a reassuring smile.
Miss Crow, what on Arisiadia were you thinking?
One of the headmasters, Mr. Lockhart, asks.
She wasn't thinking, clearly.
The headmaster to the left, Mr. Leyen, adds.
Hey!
I exclaim, lurching forward slightly in my seat. A hand rests on my forearm, reminding me to keep calm. I sit back in my seat and glare at the men across from me.
I was just being foolish,
the third headmaster, whose name I can't remember, says, cutting me off.
That's not fair. Let me explain,
I reply, trying to curb the whine in my voice.
This fucking sucks.
Life isn't fair, Miss Crow. Just because you have 12 marks, don't expect life to give you special treatment,
Mr. Leyen says, flicking a strand of his blonde hair from his face.
I'm not expecting special treatment. I'm asking for fair treatment,
I mutter, but he catches it.
Are you talking back to me?
Mr. Leyen questions, glaring at me.
I'm sure Miss Crow didn't mean it, did you?
Mr. Daniels says softly, drawing the focus to himself. Miss Crow, if you would please listen to the headmasters, they do have concerns they wish to explain. I'm sure they were just about to get to the point, he says, his tone laced with bite at the last part directed at the three headmasters, none of which dare to call him on it.
Yes, yes. Miss Crow, the people who attacked the school are members of a marked terrorist group. I'm not sure how much of this you have heard about, but they seek to start a revolution, one that would be very dangerous for both humans and our own kind,
Mr. Lockhart explains.
I've heard of them, but why would they come to the academy? I ask.
The intelligence we were sent from the council indicates they came for two things, one of which they succeeded in getting, and the other which they failed to collect,
Mr. Lockhart answers.
What things? I question.
One was a necklace, an artifact we believe came across from Arisiadia. It's believed to strengthen the 12th power.
The other headmaster answers, giving me a pointed look. I swallow and look between the four men in the room, already knowing the answer, but needing to ask all the same.
And the other?
I whisper.
They were after you, Miss Crow,
Mr. Daniels answers, the seriousness in his low voice sending a shiver through me. I'm silent for a moment, but then a thought strikes me.
Wait a minute. Does that mean they would have gone looking for me? Gone to my dorm room?
I question.
Well, Mr. Leyen begins, but I cut him off.
So, you're telling me off for leaving my room, which I would have been kidnapped from if I stayed put?
I question, not able to stop the snarky tone slipping into my voice.
Mr. Daniels was instructed to collect you if and when an attack happened. He has a copy of your full timetable, and any regular movements of yours are made known to him. You weren't where you were meant to be.
You're spying on me,
I ask as I turn to the side to face Mr. Daniels.
Only to keep you safe. Since you were marked last week, there have been a lot of stirrings from the group. They want you. I'm not sure if it's your power or for the show of power, but they do.
But I don't understand. You're acting like you knew about this for longer,
I question. He sighs and runs a hand through his hair before answering.
A gifted seer predicted a student would be given 12 marks. I've been here under order from the council for the past 2 years waiting. They wanted me to stay teaching in the school, so it would not look suspicious when the student with 12 did start.
He explains.
You're not really a teacher, I ask.
I am. Well, now I am anyway. but my main job is to keep you safe, he says. He turns and directs his attention to the headmasters. I do not think Miss Crow should be staying in the dorm any longer. It's not safe. I need to be able to keep a closer eye on her, while not interrupting her studies.
What are you suggesting? Mr. Lockhart asks, raising a thick, dark eyebrow in question.
I think she should stay with me. I have a spare room. Then she would either be with me, in the main building, or attending a lesson, he says.
Stay with Mr. Daniels? He cannot be serious. I really don't think this would be wise, Mr. Lockhart says, narrowing his eyes on me, as if Mr. Daniels' insane suggestion was my fault.
I agree. It's not a suggestion, Mr. Kane, Mr. Daniels replies, finally reminding me of the third headmaster's name. You can't just... Am I really going to have to call down to London and get them to overrule you?
Mr. Daniels asks, cutting Mr. Kane off. Identical looks of annoyance cross all three headmasters' faces, clearly unhappy with the fact that he could so easily go over their heads.
Of course not. If this is the best way to keep Miss Crow safe, then by all means, she may stay with you, Mr. Lockhart says, his voice suggesting the very opposite of his agreeing statement.
I do think it would be best, Mr. Daniels replies, standing to leave. Come along, Miss Crow.
I stand and turn around to follow him, not giving the headmasters another look either. They clearly aren't in charge here. Do I get a say in this? I mutter as we exit the office.
Not a damn word, Miss Crow, he replies without humour, and continues down the corridor, not waiting for me to catch up. Chapter 20. Kenzie. I try to avoid the looks I get from the other students as I walk into the dining hall for breakfast. Making a beeline for where Kelly, East and the twins are sitting, not even detouring to get food or coffee. I slump down into the seat next to Kelly.
You look tired. I'm guessing you didn't get any sleep after what happened last night then?
East asks from across the table. I look tired. Everyone knows that's polite code for you look like crap, I mutter, snagging a piece of toast from Logan's plate. He frowns but doesn't say anything as I munch silently, avoiding the looks of everyone else in the room.
Fine. You look crappy. Is that what you wanted to hear? Kelly chimes in sarcastically.
I'm worried. Why did they move you? She asks.
Isn't it obvious? Locke says, answering for me.
Kelly shakes her head, clearly confused.
The rogues were after her, Logan answers.
What? You can't be serious,
Kelly says, shooting me a concerned look before focusing her gaze back on the twins.
How would you know?
They both shrug in sync.
It's obvious. Why else would they move Kenzie?
East says.
Well, clearly it's obvious to everyone but me, Kelly says, sighing. I was so worried when someone came in and grabbed all your stuff last night, Kenz, she adds.
I grab for her hand and give her my best attempt at a reassuring smile.
It's fine, honestly, I say softly. Where are you staying now? Somewhere safer? She asks.
I roll my eyes.
Yeah, you could say that, I mutter.
Shacking up with a teacher in the first week. Classy, Mackenzie. Really classy.
A familiar, irritating voice says loudly from behind me.
How the fuck does Stella know where I am staying?
Hi, Stella,
I say sweetly, turning to face her.
Want to practice for pain class?
She visibly pales at my comment, taking a slight step back.
I'll pass on that, you little psycho. But I guess you could always practice with Mr. Daniels. I hear pain can be very fun to play with in the bedroom, she comments.
East chokes on his drink, and Logan thumps him on the back.
You're staying with Mr. Daniels?
He asks me directly, ignoring Stella.
Yes, in the spare room. For safety.
I reply blankly. Stella laughs, a harsh, forced sound.
For safety, that's the excuse you're going with. Cute, she says, deliberately speaking loud enough so that the people at the surrounding tables can hear.
By lunch, everyone will know where I'm staying, and they will be assuming it's for completely different reasons than the true one.
Great. Yes, for safety. Rogues attacked the academy last night, if you didn't notice,
I say sarcastically.
And you're getting special treatment because...
she snaps. Because she's got 12 marks and is a target, obviously. Get a fucking grip and get lost, Stella. Enzo's voice floats over.
Stella steps to the side and reveals Enzo standing there, holding two trays. He takes a seat at the table, sliding one breakfast-filled tray across to me, and the other in front of himself.
Hey, Enzo. I didn't see you there.
Stella practically purrs, completely ignoring the fact he plainly just told her to take a hike.
Stella, go crawl back into whatever cave you came out of, Locke mutters.
Fuck off, Logan,
she spits back. I laugh.
That's Locke, I chirp.
Does it fucking matter? They're basically just one annoying person anyway, Stella says, earning glares from all of us. Fine, I'm going. The standards over at this table have clearly dropped too low for me to stick around anyway, she says, looking pointedly at me and Kelly.
Relief washes over me as she walks away. I was moments from slapping the sense into her.
You're staying with Mr. Daniels?
East asks again quietly, repeating his earlier question.
Yes, for safety,
I say, repeating my previous answer. Is there a problem with that? He stares silently at me, considering for a while before shrugging.
I guess not, he says casually,
but I can see the intense looks he is giving the twins. I decide to ignore it.
Thanks for breakfast,
I mumble to Enzo.
I was only trying to save my own. I could see you stealing Logan's from over there, and decided you having your own would be my best chance at keeping my food to myself.
He answers coldly.
Sure. Thanks anyway,
I say, trying to stop the smug smile creeping over my face. He's not a complete ass, then.
What classes have you got today, Kens?
Kelly asks, moving the conversation onto a lighter tone.
Transmutation, and the app said it's an all-day class for the first one,
I answer.
You've got electives today, right?
Yep. Marked history and literature.
The history teacher is apparently a total bore, though, so I'm already regretting that decision, she replies.
You can drop it if it's crap, though, right? I ask, taking a bite of bacon.
God, that's good.
Yes, only after the end of term, though, she says, sighing.
You'll probably die of boredom by then,
Locke says, tapping his fingers on the table, having already finished his food.
That bad? I ask.
Even he falls asleep teaching that class,
Logan answers, a smirk crossing his face.
Have fun, I tease Kelly. A frown crosses her face.
I think I may regret taking so many electives, she says softly.
Most definitely. The best part about having less powers is all the free time. I'm kind of jealous, Locke says.
She bites her lip, clearly holding something back. Instead, she just smiles and nods politely.
Damn, she really is still worked up about having two marks.
Better to be a master of two marks than a master of none, I chime. She rolls her eyes.
But it's better to be a master of all 12. She teases.
I'll be lucky if I can cover the basics in each, I reply. Just too much effort to become a master. I'd rather watch Netflix.
You're such a bad liar, she replies.
You should probably do more eating and less talking, Kens. We've got to be in transmutation in 15 minutes,
Easton says, interrupting us.
Fine, fine, I mutter, shoveling more food in my mouth.
Far too much food at once. I can feel my cheeks are slightly puffed out.
I grin at him. He just shakes his head smiling at me, before going back to finishing his own food. We finish off our food, and I walk out with East, keeping my eyes on the floor and away from everyone in the room who I know are staring. "So who teaches transmutation?" I ask East as we make our way outside the academy and towards the woods, where the class is apparently being held. It's freezing out here, and I pull my coat closer around me. Why are all the classes outside when there are buildings with heating? "Mr. Daniels," East says, his voice dripping with annoyance. I glance at East as he moves slightly closer to me, and his arm brushes mine. We haven't had a chance to talk since the kiss yesterday, and everything that happened after. I want to talk to him about it, but no, it's not the best idea right now. I haven't even had a chance to tell Kelly about what happened. She's never going to believe sexy East kissed me. "Don't you like him?" I ask.
"I respect him, but I don't trust him around you, Kins,"
East says just as we come into the clearing, and a group of students are standing in a circle with Mr. Daniels in the middle. His eyes meet mine, and he waves us over. Mr. Daniels looks good today in a black coat. His soft brown hair is brushed to one side, and he is freshly shaven. I can't look away as we stop in the gap in the circle, and Mr. Daniels gives me a strange look, his eyes drifting to East before looking away.
"Now that everyone is here, we can start. I'm Mr. Daniels, and this is your first transmutation class. Transmutation is the ability to shift into an animal, and it's a powerful mark to have. Now, animals are individual to each person. There's no way to know what you will get until you try."
"I heard that you are more likely to get the animals your parents have," a girl says, blushing when Mr. Daniels turns to look at her.
A slight bit of jealousy flitters through me when he nods and replies to her.
"Yes, Annabelle. Sometimes animals run in the family, but that's not always the case. My parents both have the transmutation mark, and my wolf is different from theirs. They have a snake and a rat," he tells her.
She giggles and smiles at him.
Why does he know her first name?
I swallow down the bitter jealousy I feel, deciding I just don't like the girl, and keep listening as Mr. Daniels carries on talking.
"Some animals, like bears, for example, are great for combat, and others, like mice, are good for escaping. Either way, this class will teach you how to shift safely and still be in control. No matter the size of your animal, losing control and letting their instinct take over is easy. It's much harder to remember that you are human and not animal. That's something to think on when you shift. Try to remember who you are. One more thing before we start. The first shift is difficult, painful even,"
he tells us and pauses as people start whispering. He flat out avoids looking at me as he carries on speaking.
"So we will take shifting one by one, and I will command you to shift back for the first time. I assume everyone read the message and understands about the protection mark?"
he asks. Everyone says yes, and I try to think back to what my dad said about the protection mark and shifting. I can't remember, and I'm sure it can't be that important anyway.
"Those of you who do not have the protection mark will go last. We have a separate practice in place for you. Easton, Jacob Sky, and Marcel, you are the only ones without protection here, correct?"
he asks.
"I don't either, sir,"
another guy says. Mr. Daniel nods.
"Mr. Dawn, please step forward,"
Mr. Daniels asks, and another guy with bright ginger hair and a spotty face steps forward.
"Please call your mark,"
Mr. Daniels suggests, and we all go quiet as we watch him shift. It takes a few minutes, but his body starts to glimmer. When the glimmering stops, there's a small ginger cat sitting on the ground. The cat shakily takes a step forward and then stops, looking up at Mr. Daniels before rolling on the floor and showing his belly. I wouldn't be able to tell that's anything other than a normal cat at one glance. I wonder how many marked shift into normal animals and just walk around.
"Shift!"
Mr. Daniels says with such power in his voice that it makes me want to cower from him. His voice is deep, dark almost, and reminds me just how powerful he is. I have a feeling that Mr. Daniels is constantly holding back with his power, and could do much more than most. The cat glimmers once more, and the guy is back, kneeling, and he shakes a little as he stands.
Brilliant first shift. Well done, Mr. Dawn,
Mr. Daniels says and claps. We clap, too, as the guy blushes and takes a step back. Two more people shift while we wait, one into a large horse and another into a lion. Mr. Daniels congratulates them both, and I whisper to East,
"What do you shift into?"
"A hawk,"
he whispers back, moving closer and placing his hand on the middle of my back. That must be a sight to see, and it kind of suits him.
"Miss Crow, if you would leave your boyfriend for a second and come here, I have called you twice,"
Mr. Daniels says, and there's an awkward silence as I look back at him. He isn't looking at me. No, he is glaring at East.
What is his problem?
"Sure," I say, stepping forward.
"Please call your mark, Miss Crow,"
he tells me as I stop in the middle of the circle. I call the mark into my mind, imagining the circle with dozens of lines in the middle of it, and they all cross over. The first thing I feel is a slight pain in my hip where the mark is, and then it spreads, causing me to close my eyes and hold in the urge to scream. The pain washes over my body like a wave, feeling like it hits every part of me before it stops. I blink open my eyes, feeling how different my body feels straight away. I stretch slightly, seeing large paws instead of arms in front of me, and somehow it doesn't freak me out. My fur is white, and everything seems a little more in focus than I've ever seen it. I can see the white flecks of dust in the air, and when I take a deep breath, the strong smells of the people around me. I look up as a deep voice speaks.
"Shift, Miss Crow,"
I hear, and I shake my head, knocking off the urge to do as he said. I don't want to. I go to tell him no, and a loud growl comes out instead. I must be a wolf or a dog. I look over at Mr. Daniels, seeing that I'm about half the size of him, so a large animal, definitely.
"Come back, Mackenzie,"
another voice says next to me, as I hear steps on the grass and look up into East's worried face as he crouches down a few steps away from me. East. I remember East.
"Shift,"
the deep voice says again, and all I hear is the demand, the challenge in his deep voice. I turn to look at Mr. Daniels, and no part of me stops as I jump at him. He catches me mid-air as I snap my teeth at him, wanting to challenge him back. We land on the floor with a smack, and I hear him groan in pain, my teeth inches away from his neck. The jolt shocks me out of whatever that was, and I remember who he is, who I am. I push the mark away in my mind, begging for my normal body back. When a slight bite of pain starts at my hip and spreads across my body, I welcome it and close my eyes. When I start to feel normal again, I smile down at Mr. Daniels and see a paw turn into a hand on his shoulder. My hair falls down my body, my very naked body.
Shit.
Kens!
East's horrified voice comes from behind me, and the chilly air hits my back. I'm naked, on top of Mr. Daniels.
"Everyone look away before I make you,"
East threatens as I try to keep very still on top of Mr. Daniels, as I feel every part of him against me. Gods, this is not how I wanted to get naked with Mr. Daniels, not one little bit.
"Get her a jacket now,"
Mr. Daniels says as I stand up, and he keeps his eyes off my body. I try to cover myself up as East comes over, shirtless, and hands me his shirt. I slip it over my head, and it, thankfully, falls to my knees. I pull my hair out of the shirt and look over at the shredded pile of clothes where I must have shifted. Thankfully, my phone and shoes seem to have made it, but nothing else. I walk over and slip them on, picking up my phone and looking back at Mr. Daniels, who runs his hands over his face.
Go back to your room, Miss Crow. We will speak about how to use the protection mark to keep your clothes on later. Easton, go with her.